WHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Traveling somewhere for this last unofficial weekend of summer? You and more than 148 million others.
Many of them at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport over the next 6 days, explains the TSA's Robert Spinden.
The Transportation Security Administration expects to screen almost 450,000 passengers here in Atlanta during the Labor Day weekend.
The airport's Assistant General Manager, Jordan Begler, says today is going to be the busiest travel day, followed by Monday.
330,000 passengers, and Monday, September 4th, with over 300,000 passengers.
He also says all public-facing construction is suspended for the holiday weekend. Michelle Wright for CBS News, Atlanta.
If you're hitting the road instead of flying, gas prices are a bit higher. Joshua Stolt is in Georgia.
I mean, nothing obviously was as bad as out west, you know, where it was almost $6, $7 a gallon, you know, almost double the price of what it is here. So it's a little bit better here, even with the up and downs.
And by the way, we do still have a few more weeks of summer. Fall doesn't officially begin until September 23rd. Business reporter Jason Brooks now has details on the latest jobs report.
The Labor Department reported a gain of 187,000 jobs in August, which was slightly above estimates. But the previous 2 months were revised down by a combined 110,000 jobs. On top of that, the unemployment rate surged to its highest reading since February 2022, from 3.5 to 3.8%. Hourly wages rose 4.3% from a year earlier, a weaker gain than the prior month, and another key data point for the Fed to consider when it meets later this month.
President Biden is heading to Florida in the morning, where he'll see firsthand the damage from Hurricane Idalia and meet with Governor Ron DeSantis.
We're now at about 400 and I think almost 480,000 accounts have been restored to power since the storm hit. And the outstanding without power is approximately 84,000.
Pope Francis has gone where no pope has gone before, Mongolia.
The question is, why? Why would the pope come all the way out here for such a small Catholic community? Well, it's always been a part of his policy to reach out to the peripheries of any kind, whether they're geographical and whether they're cultural or social. It also has to do with Mongolia's neighbors. It is landlocked, sandwiched in between Russia and China, two very important countries geopolitically where Pope Francis would love to visit.
CBS's Chris Livesay tells us Mongolia has one of the world's smallest and newest Catholic communities with less than 1,500 Catholics. Checking Wall Street before the close, the Dow is up 84 points. This is CBS News.
At Staples, school savings are always in session. From art supplies and essentials to the latest tech, in stock and priced low. School on, save on at your local Staples store.
Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Hey guys, did you know there's a generic form of Viagra that works just the same, but is 95% cheaper? And you can get it online? Just go to 4hymns.com/joy. Through Hymns, you'll get a free medical consultation, discreet shipping if prescribed, a 100% online process, and trusted generic alternatives to the name brands. Add up to 95% off. That's right. Get generic for Viagra, the same active ingredient as brand name Viagra, but for 95% less. It's the same medication, still prescribed by a licensed medical provider, but with zero copay, no expensive appointments, and no awkward face-to-face conversations. To start your free online visit, you need to go to this exclusive address, 4hymns.com/joy. That's 4hymns.com/joy for your free online visit. forhims.com/joy.
Saddle up, buckaroos. It's time to start the cattle drive with Trail Tunes, the new cowboy, western, and south of the border show on WisCountry 105.5 WIRI. Every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m., join me, Gene, Roy, Tex, and Rex with songs of lonesome cowboys, wicked rustlers, and sighing senoritas. From the sons of the pioneers to riders in the sky, Trail Tunes will have you wishing for those wide open spaces. Every Thursday from 7 to 8, only on WisCountry 105.5.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. There's lots to do this weekend in Rome. Hoozles at the Lakes has live music tonight by Rising Phoenix from 7 to 11. On Saturday, the swap meet will be held at the Rome Town Hall from 8 to noon. The craft show is at Lake Arrowhead from 9 to 3. The meat raffle at Pineland Camping Park is from 3 to 5, and music at the Lake Sherwood Lodge from 5 to 9. The Shermalot Water Ski Team will perform from 6:30 to 7:30, and Hoozles at the Lakes will have live music again from 7 to 11. Check out the Visit Rome Facebook page for all the details. Most government buildings in the listening area will be closed on Monday, September 4th, for the Labor Day holiday. Sheriff's Department deputies and other emergency responders will remain on duty, but their offices will be closed to the public. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Slight chance for scattered storms tonight, otherwise mainly cloudy skies. Lows around 63, winds out of the southwest 5 to 10 miles per hour. Slight chance for scattered thunderstorms tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 90, mainly cloudy skies. Lows level off around 69, tomorrow night partly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 81.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this September 1st, 2023. I have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 3:30, we're going to welcome in our good friend Connie Tomsky-Fayville from FRM Music, and we're going to talk about FRM Fest coming up. Right now, we've got our friend Scott Krug, Wisconsin State Representative, joining us right now on the phone. Scott, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today, James?
Doing good. Enjoying this weather. Well, it's enjoyable. I mean, we got some heavy stuff coming up here. Just going to enjoy it, though. We know what's coming in a couple of months. Just going to enjoy the warmth while we can and be safe out there, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, 105 on Monday doesn't sound awful one more time, so why not?
Yeah. Scott is going to be joining us, as he usually does, in the opening slot here on Fridays. But next October 6th, the next time Scott is joining us, we're actually going to be playing him at 3:30, in part because you got plans that day. You're going to be at the legislative breakfast.
That's right. Yeah, I'm glad. Well, somebody's got a good eye on my calendar, at least. I end up just looking to the day of and just figuring out where I need to go. So
right. Scott, what is it about those that is so important you feel for representatives to be representing at?
Well, you know, honestly, I think it's the biggest part of the job entirely is to not be in the Capitol, but to be back home and just let people know what's going on down there when we are down there. So, I mean, you know, the whole process behind the curtain type thing is, you know, I've got two staff people down in Madison. We have got all the technology in the world. I don't need to be in that building unless we're having a committee hearing or voting on bills. So I like being back here at home to do those events, to make sure people know exactly what's going on, so they get the absolute, you know, final word on what is actually happening instead of hearing things, you know, second and third hand all the time. So. Mm-hmm.
Scott, I wanted to get into rewinding a little bit here, but we didn't get a chance to talk afterwards. The Republican debates were recently here right in Milwaukee. What were your takeaways from that?
Well, I mean, it's good for tourism for Milwaukee.
yes, right away. Agree. Couldn't agree. That's a perfect first statement. That's awesome. And he couldn't agree with you more.
Economic development, right? Mm-hmm. People all week have been asking me, like, did you go to the debate? Did you watch the debate? I'm like, no, I didn't. I mean, it's not my lane, you know? I mean, when we get to the point where we have a primary here in Wisconsin, the process will work through, the people will pick who they think might be their best choice at that point. But I thought it was just way too early in the season to have this first debate, because even things in Madison really don't get going until Labor Day and after, when people are back to school and done with vacation. So start talking presidential debates in August. I think they jumped the gun and missed an opportunity just to wait until people are settled back into their routine to get to know their voters at that point.
It reminds me, I got a buddy of mine. He just will not watch a basketball game until like the fourth period. He doesn't see any point. He's like, the games always go back and forth. You never know. It's always decided in the last couple minutes. So he literally won't watch a game until like the last quarter.
Well, I mean, that's basketball for me too, right? I mean, unless it's high school, tournament on TV or March Madness. I mean, even NBA, I don't really watch till playoffs, and deep into the playoffs, maybe it gets interesting. But I mean, it's the same with presidential politics, is that three quarters or maybe four fifths of those people up on that stage are not going to be on the ballot, you know, when it comes time to pick and choose who we want in our primary. So I'm glad they each got their, 10 seconds to yell at each other, but I will check in the fourth quarter.
Well, and you're not alone on that, Scott. That actually is the perfect answer to set me up where I wanted to go with this, because I've talked to a number of our community members here in town. I've done some reading on NPR and WPR and some other sites, too, about this most recent batch of Republican nominees. And the big takeaway from this that I took was, in part, some interesting stuff there. So when it comes to former President Donald Trump not being at the debates, the feedback from even Trump supporters was they were thankful he wasn't there, because the big thing that I am hearing from a lot of them is, one, that he has become, even supporters of him, that he has become a distraction. And that he's not the candidate that they voted for that first two times that they did. But also that they are not able to learn about other candidates because he takes up the news cycle. There's only so much news, and all of it is being centered around him and these other candidates. People don't have the time or don't have the bandwidth to be able to learn about or take in. Do you think that this is going to continue, that this could be a continued distraction for the Republican Party going forward with this?
It will be. I mean, that's just how this whole process is going to work on both sides. You know, I mean, even on the Democrat side, when people start talking about, is Joe Biden too old? Are we going to see somebody else come in? And you're going to hear all these chatters on both sides. And, you know, that's just politics as usual. People trying to distract from who the main candidates are. And, you know, we'll get to the point where we start vetting out some of these people. You know, in retrospect and things I hear after the debate, Nikki Haley did great. You know, Ron DeSantis had a good message. Mike Pence didn't do as good as people thought he would. And, you know, so you kind of can read through the tea leaves on who's going to be there and who's not going to be there, who's going to be the main challengers. So we'll keep our eyes on who's going to New Hampshire and who's going to Iowa. And, you know, there's kind of that process we've been through a few times, especially in my career, is just knowing when to pay attention, who to pay attention to. I mean, like I said, there's going to be a bunch of those guys, Chris Christie and Vivek and some of these other guys who just wanted to be noisemakers instead of actual real candidates. So it's going to take some time to sort out. So I think people got plenty of time to do more research on their own and, you know, look at those individual candidates outside of that forum and just figure out who to keep on their radar before they start making choices later in next year.
You mentioned Ron DeSantis, and one of the individuals I talked to who is a Trump supporter, she was telling me that she was disappointed in DeSantis wasn't more bombastic, that he wasn't more loud. And those were her words. I made sure to write them down. This P.T. Barnum approach to politics that seems like a lot of people are leaning into, specifically on the Republican side, but the Democratic side as well. It's not that as if this has an R or D in front of its name. Do you think we're going to get away from that or lean more into it?
I want to get away from it. That's exactly what I want to get away from. I mean, you know, take, for example, the work we're doing in the Assembly Campaigns and Elections Committee versus what's going on the Senate side in campaigns and elections, where they're still beating those drum beats and, you know, trying to capture all of that anger. And, you know, we're looking at policy. We're looking at making real significant change, passing bills through our committee that can get signed into law so we can fix problems that actually exist. I mean, this bombastic populism approach to politics is getting nobody anywhere. I mean, you're just making noise and ginning people up, and then you can't get to legislative solutions and pass bills and create budgets and do all of the things that we're actually really supposed to be doing. So I'm glad that DeSantis is more of an in-between where Donald Trump is on the loud side and where Mike Pence is trying to be the actual counterweight to it. DeSantis and Nikki Haley and Tim Scott, some of those guys and gals in the middle to the middle right, I mean, those appeal to me a lot more than someone who's going to yell and interrupt. And I mean, you look at debates in the last 4 to 6 years on the presidential side, you can't even watch them when it gets to head-to-head because nobody actually either answers the questions or lets somebody else answer their questions without interrupting constantly. It's childish behavior. So
recently, this kind of broke over the night. Wisconsin Republicans circulated proposals on child care affordability. For those that have not been able to read into what that is, can we get into that, Scott?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is one of the bigger things that emerged during the budget process was, you know, during the height of COVID, the federal government sent all kinds of money down to the states. And one of the things that the governor created was a $400 million some program around child care that, you know, once federal money ran out, he didn't have a source of money to keep funding that program. So now we're looking at ways to try to figure out, you know, what actually was impactful from that instead of just putting money into things. How do we actually create slots? How do we actually have daycares improve their facilities so they can qualify for better ratings, so people trust them more? So this whole package that we just put out yesterday that I signed on to from Representative Golden, Representative Hurd, and Senator Quinn, the child care package we're talking about really revolves around, yes, we're going to put money into this process, but we're also going to figure out ways to help infrastructure of these facilities so they can actually make repairs and build things that are safe and make sure parents can trust that they're getting the highest ratings. And so it's quite an intricate package of bills that is going to help keep our ratios set for the number of kids that can be in a home. One of the bills is currently saying, well, you know, in home daycare, we allow six children to be in anybody's home to provide daycare, but three of them have to be your own children. Up to three of them can be your own children. So one of the bills actually says, well, if you're going to be a home daycare and you don't have kids, you don't have to be limited to three. We can actually take care of the same six kids as your neighbor does just because three of them are her own. So it's just getting rid of some of those bureaucratic things that just don't make sense to allow more slots to be open to give people more options and choices in childcare.
There is some fear that the loosened regulations could hurt quality. Are there things in place in this bill to kind of counter that or keep an eye on that?
Well, that's what YoungStar exists for already. And that's one of the things when I chaired Children and Families for two sessions, that we keep making sure that we're keeping Department of Children and Families on top of, you know, quality ratings for every daycare in the state of Wisconsin, giving them star ratings so they're easily to be interpreted by parents as quality daycare centers or not so high quality daycare centers. So YoungStar, in its existence for the past decade and a half, has done a really great job on sorting out where you should go and where you should maybe look twice at going. And Department of Children and Families is doing a great job with that. And they're always funded appropriately in the state budget to maintain that program, so you know where quality is and where it needs to be improved.
This is certainly good for headlines and, more importantly, hopefully good for Wisconsin families, but it doesn't feel like enough. Is there talk with you and your colleagues of doing more for child care in the state?
I don't know how much more can be done, right? I mean, people talk about trying to continue the program that existed from federal dollars. And if the federal government had more money to put into what we're doing for child care on top of the state money that we're already putting in through the state budget, and now with these bills, there isn't much more we can do to create more slots, because creating that workforce is something that is the bigger challenge right now than opening slots. If we don't have a workforce that's even available to provide slots, that's our biggest challenge. So we've got to make sure that we can possibly do a little bit more on the education side with the technical college system for licensing, some things like that, but we're opening as many slots and as many centers as we possibly can without just throwing direct money at people just to say, okay, here's what you're supposed to do, and, you know, we have to trust that you're going to do what you want to do with that money. So I think the package that we have in front of us, the $90 million that we invest in the state budget, I think that's about as good as we're going to get this session on child care issues in the state of Wisconsin.
Speaking with State Representative Scott Krug, and Scott, piggybacking off of that, you mentioned other things we can do. Wisconsin's minimum wage is $7.25. It has been that since 2008. Do you think there's any change of that coming in the future?
No, I don't see that at all, because you can't. I would challenge anybody who's listening today or any other day to find me a business anywhere in Wisconsin Rapids that's still paying $7.25 an hour. So when we talk about government setting minimum wages, the market has eclipsed that enormously. If you go look at starting wages at Quick Trip or McDonald's or CVS or anywhere up and down A Street, you're not going to find a $7.25 an hour job right now. You're looking at $12 an hour starting jobs to $15 an hour starting wages. Even third shifts at Quick Trip are paying almost $20 an hour at this point. So I think an artificially set minimum wage by the government's already ignored entirely by the market.
But, and I'll even give you that, but this is the reason why we have laws and bills to hold accountability. That may be the case, but we don't know for a fact that everybody is doing that. In order to make sure that they do that, having a government minimum wage, a state minimum wage, is very important.
I don't know so much. I mean, so here's where employees and employers have these conversations, and where an employee could see in the marketplace where we have less than 3% unemployment that their value is not to stay in a job that pays them $7.25 an hour when the place across the street is going to allow them to make $12 or $15 an hour. I can't imagine any individual who's going to want to stay at a business to work at $7.25 an hour when there are opportunities almost up and down A Street in Wisconsin Rapids, I use an example, or up and down Wetomish Main Drag or wherever else it may be that's going to pay them a much higher wage than where they might be trying to be pigeonholed in for $7.25 an hour. And I think that's one of the points that I've always tried to make to people is you can't rely on government for everything, right? You've got to be able to be a consumer that makes good choices, whether it's in your information that you're getting from the television or the radio, or whether it's making choices for your employment situation, that you're not going to take the crappiest job just because it's the first one out there. So I think there's a lot of individual responsibility to make sure that you can maximize your opportunities and find the best path for yourself. And I think, like I said, the minimum wage has been eclipsed nationwide, and I can't imagine anybody could call in even right now and tell me, yes, I know my cousin's working over at the Shell station on A Street making $7.25 an hour. It's not happening right now.
And I don't disagree with that, but I do think the businesses, the accountability needs to be, that having a bill in motion for this not only does that, but Senator Tessin and I were just talking the last couple of times we've talked about bringing in people from out of state. I'm not going to know that if I'm looking at Wisconsin, I'm just Googling and looking at Wisconsin's, national minimum wage. I'm not going to know that in the town I'm moving into that they're paying businesses on that main street more than that. It doesn't help that part of things either any more than it does help keeping businesses accountable for this.
So the accountability is that they're not going to be able to draw people to come work there if they're paying $7.25 an hour, James. They're just not going to. Nobody's going to go apply there if they're paying that type of wage anymore. So I get what you're saying, but I think that's probably the last thing people think of when they're looking for a job is what does the government set as the minimum wage?
Okay. Let's talk water quality. Let's go sure. on. There's been some progress on water quality. I want to get into that with you a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. Tomorrow's our annual meeting for the Tri-Lakes Lake District that I serve on down here in Rome, Arrowhead, Camelot, and Sherwood. And I live about a mile from the beach here, so on my daily walk down, I get down to the beach, and for the first time that I can remember in the last 10 years living in Rome, I'm walking through a clean lake here on Arrowhead. And when you go down to the other side, just down the hill from me, you go down to Lake Peatonwell, you get onto the Lure, and you go have a dinner down there, you're not smelling stinky blue-green algae anymore like you were 10 years ago either. Mm-hmm. So I am thrilled to see how far we've come on making sure that there's cooperation between agriculture and the residents of the area to make sure that we can still produce all the things we need to do to feed the rest of the world, and we can keep the water clean at the same time. So it has been yeoman's work over the last decade to start seeing some of these things come to fruition. And it's going to be exciting tomorrow to be able to present some of these results and some of the new technologies we're using here at our little lake district to show how we can replicate further success in the rest of the lakes of Wisconsin on keeping water clean.
You know, you and Senator Tessin, Katrina Shankland, you three I've been talking to for a long enough time now that I remember when this was some of our early conversations, and it felt like we were just trying to get people to pay attention to the subject. How good does it feel to be at this point right now?
I mean, it's career defining. I mean, I could walk out the door at this point just because, like I said, 10 years ago to have even a conversation about this was the most uncomfortable thing that you could think of in politics. It was like, it was a third rail. Like, okay, how do we get egg producers to understand the impacts that are being felt by people here all over central Wisconsin because of some of the practices that are ongoing? And then, like we had the talk about minimum wage where the threat of legislation actually held employers accountable, this one did. So like I said, I took your point on it. We did put out ideas for legislation that started to drive producers towards changing how they operate before it got to the point where we mandated that they had to. And things changed really quickly, and you started seeing a lot more producer-led watershed groups take shape here all around central Wisconsin because of a bill that I wrote in 2013 with Amy Loudenbeck to the cost share a lot of those activities that they would need to take care of, so they didn't feel like they were all alone. And it's been a great, great success story for Central Wisconsin. They have a bipartisan approach to water quality that can bring industry and tourism and agriculture and everybody all together to fight for the same thing.
Yeah, it really is a great example, too. There's almost a blueprint that's been written here of when you want to get things like this done, of how to make them happen. You mentioned bipartisanism and some of that and everything. It's so much of what's happening in Wisconsin right now politically, and I understand there are outliers. They are in every state, but in Wisconsin in particular, I feel like is such a great example to the union of what's happening here. So much purple is happening here, and I think so much less divisiveness than there is in other states, and I think that that's something we can hold up to the whole union and show as an example.
Yeah, and I think that's the exact lane that I've chosen to show exactly how we can do this across the board. So that is how we operate in the Assembly Campaigns and Elections Committee. And I've told anybody that's going to write an elections bill, I don't even think about bringing it to our committee unless you have bipartisan co-sponsorship in both the Assembly and the Senate. And now every author that's bringing election bills forward is making sure they're reaching out bicameral, bipartisan bill authors to come forward and say, okay, all four of us in both chambers, the Assembly Democrats, the Assembly Republicans, the Senate Democrats, Senate Republicans, there's one of each of us standing in front of you, Mr. Chairman, on this bill, and we all think this is a great idea. So it's just been a great example to set, and I really hope that the Senate counterpart to that committee starts taking that same approach soon, and we can actually get these bills through both chambers and signed into law by the governor to actually fix some of the real things that do exist in our election process that do need to be changed. You know, whether it comes to collecting nomination papers or registering candidate committees, I mean, there's still things that have to be fixed. And that's what we're trying to tackle on that committee by using that same approach we use on water quality, making sure we're all on the same page, making sure the things that we talk about in committee are already agreed to, making sure that we can make them better through the process and get them actually signed into law.
Appreciate the behind-the-curtain look there, Scott. Thank you for that. As we're wrapping up here, just a couple more things. Scott, would you ever climb a cell tower?
Boy, if you don't know the story about me and height yet, I'll have to tell you on a story on a show at some point. So I've never actually been above the fourth floor at the state capitol, you know, where you can go all the way up to the top, take the stairs way up there. There's no way I'm going up to a cell tower because I've not gone to the top of the capitol. So.
Next time, I want to hear that story. Next time, when we got more time, I want to hear that. I bring it up because a while back, Federal Communications Commission Commissioner Brendan Carr made a bet with U.S. Rep. Mike Gallagher that the representative wasn't brave enough to climb a cell tower. They did all this, of course, to bring attention to broadband and the $1.1 billion of broadband expansion as part of the federal infrastructure investment. This is a big investment, though, for in all seriousness. This is really huge for the state of Wisconsin, especially our rural areas.
It is, and one of the struggles I've got with the continued funding of broadband access, I think technology is passing us by quicker than we can actually spend the money. I mean, we've thrown gobs and gobs of money towards expanding, fiber optics and all of these technologies that were great in the 90s and the 2000s. But I don't know that they're actually going to be the technologies moving forward into the 2020s and 2030s. So, for example, you know, I've got Starlink service when we travel with the RV, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Starlink and some of those other companies like them are starting to talk about community-based satellite internet service. And I'm like, well, you know, if we can't find enough providers, that's our problem right now, is not finding enough providers that want to take the money to expand that next quarter mile into rural areas because it's so cost expensive to lay that last mile of line all the way out into the middle of nowhere where you don't even need to lay line anymore into the 2020s and 2030s. So we've really got to start looking at technologies that are expanding right now and targeting our investments towards the things that make the most sense.
Did you get a chance to take in any of our great fairs?
You know, honestly, I didn't. Amanda and I came down with whatever the heck has been going around the last 2 weeks here. Mm-hmm. So Adams and Washera were on the same weekend as Wood County, so I was kind of hoping that'd be a busy weekend, but I did not get to any of the fairs this year because we came down with this whatever sickness that everybody's been getting, almost, it felt like COVID-like, but mm-hmm. didn't quite register there. But Yeah, it took us down for a darn near a week. So it's the first time ever that I didn't get a chance to get to the fairs and bid on kids' turkeys and chickens and cows and pigs. And
next year, you guys feeling better?
Yeah, I think we're finally at the back end of it here. So we're actually out in Bancroft camping this week to get more fresh air. And yeah,
right on. Very cool. Because we're friends, I didn't bring up the Brewers. No, I don't.
It's been good, though.
It's been good.
You know, you should bring up the White Sox, right?
Oh, dear God.
Because Reinsdorf threatening to move the White Sox actually helps the Brewers not think about relocating, because I think Reinsdorf's going to beat them to Nashville.
Yeah, he will.
Before they can think about relocating.
So. Jerry Reinsdorf is one of the worst owners of all time. Absolutely. I'm so glad we're running out of show. I don't have to talk any more White Sox. Always appreciate you, Scott. Thank you so much. You guys have a great, safe Labor Day weekend. We'll talk again real soon, sir.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thanks. More Midday Magazine coming up right here on WFHR.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. A section of 2 Mile Avenue in Wisconsin Rapids is closed until approximately September 7th between 16th and 20th Street South. Crews will be pulverizing asphalt and paving. Property owners will still have access to their driveways, and 16th Street South will remain open to traffic. The Wood County Sheriff's Department and the Marshfield Police Department are holding a brat fry to raise money for their canine program today. Stop in at Wheeler's Chevrolet in Marshfield from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and enjoy a great brat and help a great program. There's still tickets available for the Stevens Point Police Department Union's Steak Feed. It takes place at Backwoods Bar and Grill on October 7th from 3 to 8 p.m. You can buy your ticket for $25 at the police department or from a union member. All proceeds go to support local youth activities around Portage County. I'm Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Slight chance for scattered storms tonight, otherwise mainly cloudy skies. Lows around 63, winds out of the southwest 5 to 10 miles per hour. Slight chance for scattered thunderstorms tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 90, mainly cloudy skies. Lows level off around 69, tomorrow night partly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 81.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Midday Magazine for the September 1st, 2023. I have your host, James, here, and we are joined by one of our great friends, really like the fifth Beatle around here, our good friend Connie Tomsky-Fayville, talking to us from FRM, Friends of Rapids Music, to talk about the 7th Annual FRM Fest. Connie, good to see you.
Nice to see you, too, James. It seems like it's been a little while.
Yeah, it's been too long. It's nice to have you in studio with
Thank
us.
Thank you so much.
To be able to talk about this fest, 7th Annual.
Yeah.
Connie, before we get too into the weeds with the new one and what's coming up and the acts we're going to get into for the audience, can you take us back to the beginning of this and how it must feel to be at this point?
Okay, sure, yeah. Actually, just before I talk about that, I'd like to compliment you on your beautiful T-shirt.
a little wearing the band's name when I go to the concert kind of thing. Yeah, right.
No, it looks good.
It's a great shirt. These FRM shirts are eternal. I love them.
Mark Larson, designer.
Yes,
you know, last
yes. Shout
year
out to
and
Mark.
This year for sure, and in the early years as well. I actually started FRM as a Facebook group back in 2014 in the fall, this time of year. And only because after one of our gigs one time, a lady came up to me and said, you know, where are you guys playing again? And it just got me thinking, wouldn't it be good if there was some way that musicians could post their gigs and live music venues could advertise where live music is happening and the music lovers could go hear it? So I thought, well, I'm on Facebook. I know some people on Facebook. Maybe I'll start a Facebook group. And so that was the beginning in 2014. And then in 2016, Convention and Visitors Bureau, Meredith Claker, and also Maggie Molesky came to me and they said, you know a lot of musicians, don't you? I said, yeah, I know quite a few. They said, can you bring music to our Cranberry Blossom Fest?
Mm.
And I thought about it, talked to some people, some key people at the time. Jeff Goss being one of them.
Yeah.
Fish being another.
Nice.
My husband, also Jack Fable. I went back and said, I think we can do that. So that was the first one in 2016, and now it is 2023, and we couldn't do one, you know, during COVID 2020, so this is our seventh.
Very excited. Excited to get into these acts. Yeah. Before we talk about the acts individually, Connie, what kind of scouting or how does it go trying to set this up? I imagine you're already planning for next year, if not, you know, the day after FRM Fest, which is September 9th again.
Kind of all the time planning, I just try to catch as many live acts as I can, which, you know, being so busy, that's hard. Mm-hmm. But I am online all the time looking at videos. I have my ears to the ground, I guess you could say, people telling me about people that they've seen that they think would be a really good fit. And just kind of always being in the scene, you know, you get to hear some pretty cool things going on. And I get, you know, around to Minneapolis and then because my daughter lives there, and then I have a son on the East Coast. So it's kind of fun to hear what's going on, and they're both really in the music scene in both of those areas, too. So it's a collaboration, really, of just keeping aware of everything. And then if somebody strikes my interest as far as musicianship, performance ability, being able to interact with the crowd, and just something that might be a little different from what you normally would see around here. We do focus on our local bands, but for the headliner, I'm looking always for someone that's really above grade as far as talent and genre and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you hit the mark every year.
Well,
you do
thank
such a nice job with that. When it comes to the you were touching on the origins of FRM, so local based, it sounds very important to you that while you scour and you bring these acts here to our community that we wouldn't normally get usually, which is such a cool aspect and a great way to kind of enjoy and something to look forward to in summer. You also want to help out local acts.
Absolutely.
Is that a tough balance to have? Or?
Well, it's very competitive, I'll tell you that. We have a lot of great talent in this area. I always hear from bands who'd like to play, which is, it's a great nod to our event. And actually, when Maggie and Meredith first approached me, I thought, you know, we do have so much talent here. Really, really great cover bands, seems like everywhere, and new ones popping up all the way around. And, you know, I thought, if anything, or if nothing else, we will always have some really great local bands to showcase their talent and give them a chance to play in front of maybe a little bit of a larger audience than what they'd be playing in front of for bars, you know, at bars or whatever. So really proud of our local talent and always so excited to showcase whoever I get a chance to.
Well, and while we can't guarantee this or anything, FRM Fest 2030, Penguins and Planes will be there. Penguins and Planes will be there, people. I'm going to get Connie to give us a show. We don't have a band completely yet. We haven't
created
music.
Who's in this band? You
me,
and me?
Me.
Oh, you?
No,
oh,
just
good.
Me.
Well, a solo act.
I didn't want to put that on your shoulders. You've got enough bands, enough things going on. But I'm starting a band. I'm starting it up. I don't really do a lot, but we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll talk off air.
Sounds good.
Let's focus on this year's and the great acts that are coming up. We kick things off on FRM Fest, the 7th annual. Again, September 9th. Things start off right away at 1 with the Charlie and Howard duo.
Yep. So these guys have been playing together for a long time and all around central Wisconsin. They're really busy. They're booking 3 or 4 shows a week, especially in the summertime, and just a couple of nice guys. Howard volunteered for our festival last year. And so they do acoustic variety. You know, they do a lot of covers. I don't think they do much for original music, but they interact really well with the crowd and kind of get everybody started for the day. So.
It's such a great opening act.
Yeah.
It's a really good one. I'm curious about that, too, with the placement of these bands. Is that it seems like it's got your fingerprints all over.
Well, it's really critical. So what we try to do, and we've made a couple of errors in the past, all on my shoulders. But so the 1 o'clock band is just to kind of get everybody everybody started off and getting into the routine that we kind of have set up for the music for the day. And then I always like the jazz to be represented somehow.
Yeah.
And we slide them in usually at the 2 o'clock hour. And then we just kind of gradually build the sound for the day. So we're building it in not only like the genre that might be represented, but also in the size of the band. So you'll see duos or solo acts in the first and second hour. And then usually by 3 o'clock, we're easily getting into the trios or their larger bands. And so we're building in number of pieces and number of instruments all through the day. And then the headliner usually is at least a five piece, if not this year, I think there's eight pieces in this band. So that's the timing that's of really everything cool. is critical. You don't really want to have, a solo act follow a large band. It's not really fair to the solo act because they're a smaller sound, even though the talent might be huge. So the timing of things is pretty important.
That's really cool to hear. I wouldn't have thought about that. That's really interesting.
It's things we've learned over the years, believe me.
The second band hitting this stage is one of our favorites around here. We have no journalistic integrity when it comes to Katie and Ben. Heartstrings. Love these guys.
Yeah, they are something else. I was so glad when they met each other. Because they're a perfect team, musically and otherwise, good friends of ours. Mm-hmm. And the talent is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So my favorite genre to hear them play is jazz. And they have promised me some jazz, but hopefully, they'll throw in other stuff too. They like covering everything and they do it so well. Ben is a fixture in our music community in many, many different bands. He sent me his summer schedule earlier this year. I actually counted 14 bands that he had on his schedule that he was playing with this past summer. So a huge talent in both of them. Katie's voice is amazing. Ben's ability on guitar is amazing and a songwriter as well. And he's a singer, a lead singer, a harmony singer, whatever. So they're just so fun. I'm so excited. They had time in their schedule for us.
Ben is one of the most versatile musicians I've ever been around. Period.
He's amazing.
Not to mention how talented, how great he is. He's we tease him and we joke about him being in all these bands. He's not in these bands for charity.
No.
He's in these bands because they want him because he's
absolutely.
That talented.
Yeah.
It speaks to his respect in this community.
Absolutely.
Along with his ability, not only versatility musically, but just as a person.
Yeah.
How he can interact with so many different personalities, so many different genres of bands, and all of them love him.
He's the nicest guy on the planet.
He's the Tom Hanks
really,
around here. Everybody likes Ben.
Is the Tom Hanks with all this musical talent bundled in. He's a great guy.
Katie has such a theatrical voice and such a beautiful, just a classic kind of voice.
Yeah.
You put those two together and you get such a cool sound.
It's a cool sound. You know, they were in Rise to Music competition. Was that last year, I think?
Yeah.
And they did so well because... I was there as one of the judges, but they just were outstanding. And Katie is amazing because she is classically trained and on piano as well. Maybe someday she'll bring the piano to a gig.
Yeah.
But I love that voice against the jazz genre. So,
When we had them in and they were just stripped down, doing acoustic, just Ben on the guitar, her singing, a few times I've gotten goosebumps in here listening to two artists working together. And you could hear the chemistry early on. That was very early in the beginning of the band.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be great come September 9th. That's going to be a really nice one.
We're looking forward to it.
Coming up at 3 o'clock will be the Goobers.
Yeah, the Goobers.
It's just a fun name to say, first off.
Well,
it's a great name.
Great name. They're out of Madison, but they have local roots. They do 60s surf music.
Yeah.
Right. Some of it is instrumental, as you would expect. But I was blown away by the videos they sent because one of them was 96 Tears, their cover of 96 Tears.
Ooh.
And I'm like, I've not heard this covered like this before. So they have a great style. They have some goofy things that I think... Tim, their lead keyboard player, and I think he's the arranger for the group, some fun silly things that they do on stage just because they love being, you know, able to bring music to people. And they love the idea that they're maybe a little bit different than what you're going to normally see.
And again, the placement, the timing of this at 3 o'clock feels perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's a time where you could there's people that afternoon hungers come in, or maybe they get pulled away from the stage a little bit. This is something that's going to attract their attention. It's definitely going to entertain them as well as be a fun musical act.
And the 3 o'clock spot, that's generally where the people really start coming in, you know, kind of heavier than in the 1 and the 2 area. So
what a great band to come walking into.
Right?
That's really nice. Very well set up. Love these names. First, I just got to say, I love all these band names. The Alternators with Horns.
Exactly.
Oh, great name. Great name. And great blues. Really, I listen to some of this.
It's the best blues you're going to hear in our area. And they've added Rod on sax and Kevin Finbrotten on trumpet now. So that's where the horns come in, and it's a little play on words there with the Alternators, like in a car with horns.
Well played.
But when you add a horn section to a really solid blues group, it's something special.
Mm-hmm.
So we're so happy that they could all come together on this day and that they were all available. But anyway, just such a good group. These guys have been in the blues scene not only around here, but like from Chicago. Some of the major blues areas, and like a lot of musicians, they've ended up here in Rapids.
Yeah,
so we're happy to have them.
It's going to be great. And then the Funkyard Dealers. God, I love saying that.
I know.
Can I say one more? Funkyard Dealers.
Another great band name.
It really is. Yeah.
Absolutely.
These guys, it's in the title. They do funk.
They do, yep, and all local guys. Boy, I first heard them many years ago. So impressed by how tight they are and how they represent the genre so well. And I'm a big funk nut addict, I guess you'd say. Mm. And when I heard them, I'm just like, I've got to have them at the fest. This is their second appearance, I think.
Yeah.
And very excited. They're a great opener for our headliner.
You could say, we want the funk. Got to get that funk now.
We
got to say that. Anytime you want to talk Parliament, I am all with you, Connie. We could spend the next hour talking Parliament,
right?
George Clinton,
right?
Bootsy Collins.
James Brown.
Oh,
I mean, bring the funk.
And we can keep talking funk with the headliners.
Yes, absolutely. So kind of a long story behind these guys. Bunch of young guys. The horn section is mostly out of Claire, and then some of the other players out of the Wausau area. Anyway, connections really kind of helps in booking bands, but you'll remember the Alive Again project from last year's Rain Out Festival. Mm. The Chicago Tribute Band, their booking person, who's also their lead trumpet player, Patrick Phelan, Dr. Phelan, he's a music instructor at, I think, UWGB. Mm. And anyway, I connected with him this year. Mm. I said, who can you recommend? And he said, well, there's this young group coming out of the Wausau Eau Claire area. You might want to check into it. Okay. In the sake of transparency, the trumpet player in the positions is Patrick's son.
Nice. There we go. That's all right.
Yeah. I don't have his first name, but... anyway, he recommended them, sent some videos. I connected up with them. Their lead player and band manager is former lead player for Vic Ferrari.
Oh, wow. Yep. Nice.
Peyton Westberg. I'd have to look at our emails to get the last name right. Anyway, so excited. It's high energy funk.
Yes.
Right? So you're not going to sit down while these guys are playing. You're just going to want to get up and move. Full horn section and, all the other key instruments, including the Barry sax. You cannot have funk without having a Barry sax on stage,
in my opinion,
a lot of other people's opinions.
Preach! Yes!
I mean, think Tower of Power, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, Barry player was off the charts, and their bass player also was fantastic. But these kids are young. The energy's there, and it's fun to hear them play some of those old funk covers. And I think they might have an original or two, and it's going to be great. The lead singer, she's amazing.
You you bring up excellent musicians and particularly in funk. When you're going to do funk music, for especially for those that aren't as acknowledged as you are,
right?
and I are. And stuff.
Funk isn't a worldwide phenomenon. It's not that well known as a genre in a lot of areas.
It's very similar to jazz. That it doesn't matter how big the band is, every one of these musicians is tight.
Oh,
every one of them is.
They have to be.
They look like they're having such a fun, loose time on stage, but you just do a little looking into James Brown's band. Like, you didn't last in that band. You play one bad note, you're gone. You're never playing
right.
with James again.
Lots of penalties, monetary and otherwise, from James.
Yeah. George Clinton, a little similar. Not as bad as James Brown,
right?
But a little similar with
Good
his
point.
Professionalism towards the art of the music.
Yeah.
They had a lot of more fun than maybe any band has ever had.
Yeah.
Parliament did.
Yeah.
But the musicians had to be tight. Bootsy Collins, one of the greatest bass players you'll ever hear in your life.
You've hit the nail on the head, because funk is such a it's predominantly an always rhythm, right? So if you've got a bass player who's a little out of sync, or God forbid a drummer, or that Barry sax player, if anybody is just a microsecond off, the whole sound is destroyed. So you can't emphasize that enough, how tight a band needs to be to pull off a good funk sound.
And we're telling you, the positions, they have that tightness, they have that strength
absolutely.
In that band,
even though they're young. It's
amazing.
That's
crazy.
I
heard them and then saw the video, and I expected them to be at least 10 years older.
At least.
I didn't know how to feel afterwards seeing these young people being able to nail this so well. Did such a good job. You're going to enjoy them. They, again, will be the headliners for the 7th Annual FRM Fest. While all this is going on, one of the other things I love about the fest, especially when I'm emceeing in between bands and checking things out.
Yes, and thank you so much for coming back again.
My honor.
To be our MC. We love that.
My honor. I enjoy all the side things that we have going on. Last year, I had a great Native American group over to the side.
A couple years ago.
Yeah,
that's all right.
It was so great. I learned some stuff from them. I didn't expect to go over there and stuff and see that.
Yeah.
Got other great things going on too.
We do. We feel the importance of exposing kids, and this is for 12 and under, to all kinds of music, right? And music related things. So in the kids zone, yes, we have lots of treats and, you know, cotton candy, shaved ice this year. It's going to be really fun. But we also have the arts and crafts area where they can make, little pretend tambourines or pretend shakers or whatever and take them home with them. And we have a kids dance area. So there's going to be some music set up. Not live music, but it'll be music set up. They can just dance or sing along if they want, whatever. And then a lot of other games that are music related. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the bounce house, face painting. I wonder if I've left anything out. Mm-hmm. That's about it, but especially in the games area, we're going a little bit crazy with games this year, so just a lot of fun for the kids.
And it's at Robinson Park, and I am incredibly biased. It is my favorite park in the state, in maybe the world. I love Robinson Park. It's so much of my growing up around here,
there.
I spent
there
and everything. But it really is the perfect venue for this.
It really is.
The stage is all set for the band, and you got so much space around here for those kids' games and those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to credit my husband on that. That was his idea to have it at Robinson Park, and mostly coming from the notion that it's an unused public space.
Yes.
It doesn't get used as much as it could, and so, you know, once a year to have, you know, that many people there and that beautiful amphitheater and have that used for some good music, it's our pleasure to have it there. It's our hope that it will always be accessible to the public.
Connie, you touched on this a little bit. Last year's didn't go as smooth as we wanted it to. Thanks, Mother Nature.
Mother Nature.
Cooperate with us this year, would you?
I'm still angry.
You're right. I don't blame you. And I am too, to a degree, and I think others are too, because we know how important this is, not just entertainment-wise. We love showing up and taking in these bands and enjoying ourselves and organically running into people and all that.
Right.
But we also understand how important this event is to support FRM. To support our local artists.
Yep.
And that's why this year we need all of you to turn out for this.
Yes, please.
We need every single one of you. If you hear us, be there.
Yeah. I mean, we really can't emphasize that enough. It's not just the festival that is the thing for FRM. We're a nonprofit organization, and throughout the year, we use the proceeds from the festival to engage with other organizations like Boys and Girls Club, which we have a collaboration with and are trying to develop so that we can bring music to the kids. And then, you know, we've done programs offering free music lessons to kids. We have donated to the renovations at the auditorium at McMillan. Just a lot of things go on during the year, before and after the festival, that those proceeds are used for, in addition to supporting music teachers, supporting our maybe musicians who might have a medical need or maybe have passed on, and we'd like to honor them and their family, things like that. Last year, because of the rain and how cold it was, it rained all day long from setup to tear down. We didn't have the numbers that we usually have, and so we don't have seed money from that to start with, you know, how we were starting to build this year's festival. So please come out. You know, hopefully the weather will be great and we'll all have a really good time. And the musicians, you know, will get to do what they really love to do.
There's a lot of things to hang your hat on here in Central Wisconsin that we do better than most in this state, let alone in this country. But if there is one thing I will say that Central Wisconsin does better than anybody else, it is buying local and supporting local.
Yep.
We believe in that here. It is not just a phrase. People actually live it and do it. And this is a big example of that.
Yeah.
This is a great opportunity to buy local, support local for free.
For free.
You can come down. It's a free concert,
it's
everybody.
It's free. We love it when you buy the beer and you know, the soda. And,
get a shirt.
And t-shirts. Yeah, we've got the t-shirts and all kinds of other merch. If you can support FRM in that way, then we support our local community and our local music scene.
And as we wrap, Connie, always looking for volunteers, because as talented and as great as the musicians are, equally as talented and great are these volunteers and all the people, the hands on deck that you have for this event.
Absolutely. The volunteers, you know, I've said it before, they're the wheels on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
The sponsors might be the vehicle that helps us buy the bus, but the volunteers get the thing moving and going and making it happen. We've got such a good, solid core of volunteers. I'm so proud of them. I'm so happy to be part of them. And if you're interested in volunteering, we still have room for you. We need someone at the wristband table, and we got a couple of people, but we need some more. Just help us put wristbands on people. That's how we count how many people we have for granting purposes and other things. And all you have to do is put a wristband on somebody, and that's your whole job. So if you want to help us with that or any other thing that we might need, we sure would appreciate it.
Should they reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely, on Facebook or
And Connie, we certainly, along with the volunteers, sponsors.
Absolutely. We can't do it without them, that's for sure. I'll just kind of read them all off, if that's okay. Thanks. A big thanks to Encourage Community Foundation, who have been with us from the very beginning, the very first festival. Saratoga Solar Project, Quick Trip, Ho-Chunk Gaming Casino, Members Advantage, Whiskey Rapids Saloon, Renaissance, Aspirus, Thrivent Financial, Solaris, Home Furniture, Holly Rocks, Hoozles at the Lakes, Mickey's Tip Up, Kellner Club, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and a special thank you to Tom and Liz Stern.
Thank you, Connie, so much. Again, everybody, FRM Fest coming up Saturday, September 9th from 1 to 9 at beautiful Robinson Park in Wisconsin Rapids, a free celebration. We will meet you there. Find out more at frmgroup.org. That's frmgroup.org. Always good to see you, Connie. Thank you.
Good to see you, James. Thanks so much.
Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back on Tuesday for more fun on Midday Magazine at WFHR.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. A whole lot of people are on the move for the holiday.
The Labor Day weekend has begun. Millions of Americans will be boarding planes and trains and jamming the country's highways and byways to get to somewhere where they can enjoy the last weekend of summer. Tessie Rodas just flew into Newark Airport and is excited for some family time.
Traveling for the long weekend. My eldest son is having his baby shower this weekend. We came from Puerto Rico.
The Federal Aviation Administration predicts this will be the third busiest holiday weekend of the year so far, behind only the Juneteenth weekend, which included Father's Day and the President's Day break. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
Is the Federal Reserve done raising interest rates? Business reporter Jason Brooks.
Following another batch of softening labor market signals with the August jobs report, odds are firmly favoring a pause at the central bank meeting later this month and are leaning that direction for November and December, with slight odds now for a quarter-point rate cut at the December meeting. The gain of 187,000 jobs in August was slightly stronger than expected, but the unemployment rate surged from 3.5 to 3.8%, its highest reading in 18 months, while hourly wage growth also softened from July.
Recreational pot dispensaries in Chicago might get sued.
State's Attorney Patrick Keneally says cannabis dispensaries in McHenry